C1F. Number 2B.
First, the world had to go through stages from isolated minds to a collective concept of minds, has realized that every man is subject to collective beliefs, to universal beliefs. The whole psychology has revealed that. Then the whole world has become one world. They have begun to realize that what one thinks is not without influence for everybody else, that the decision one country makes is a decision which affects every other country, that we are one mankind, one world, and slowly one will realize that there is one mind. The seventh day of creation shows that infinity can only be grasped through infinity, not through finite, through the finite. And the seventh day and the 7,000 year period is round the corner. And the world is awakening to the fact that there is one mind, one ego. So let's not be behind the times. Then in life, she says, the belief of life in matter is pantheistic. God created all through mind, eternal. A recreation is unnecessary. Yes. The moment we touch the sense that there is only one mind, we lose the sense of having to create or recreate or procreate something. The moment we touch the sense there is only one I or ego, one begins to see that in that one I or ego, everything is made that has to be made. It includes all. And the whole sense of having to make something and achieve something falls away, and one only begins to realize that that one mind is spontaneously always giving us new ideas, and that that is the only creation there is. Then we come to truth. Here you have something which is now solving the problem. I said the realization of the fact that we can have no other mind but his excludes the possibility. See, now it excludes the possibility of having an erring consciousness. See, I don't know if one can grasp something which is so simple as this. What she shows here is really that we are befogged of error, she says. And because we are befogged of error, first the mist must disappear, and only as the mist disappears, we become aware of the true idea. Showing again, the true idea is not something which we have to establish, which we have to demonstrate, which we have to create. The right idea of everything is right here and now. There seems to be a fog lying about it. Seems to be a bit hidden. But it's there. Therefore, we don't have to establish the idea. We just have to see the mist melting away. And the mist is melting away in the measure as we realize that there is only one mind, because that is the light of understanding. And so she shows here that in the measure as we have but one mind, first the law of loving our neighbor is fulfilled. I like that. You know, I like that, that suddenly she takes that law of love of the gospel, which says, love your neighbor as yourself, takes it right out of the tone of love and puts it into the tone of the one mind, and says, you don't have to try to love the other fellow. If you have only one mind, there is no mind to love the other mind. Is that clear? You look at me as if I was talking riddles. If biblically seen, one says the commandment is to love one another, means that there is one and the other, and that the one has to love the other. It's a very nice thing to do. Don't try not to do it. But here, she says, if you go a step higher and see there is only one mind, then there isn't somewhere a mind of somebody who has to love the mind of somebody else. So that we have a loving attitude towards somebody else. In the one mind, there is one mind. There is no me and you. Last autumn, we started by seeing that when the world is awakening to the fact that such a thing as God and man does not exist, that God and man are terms, names, which we did attribute to principle and idea, then if we really touch that, if there is no such thing as a God and such a thing as man, then we don't have to love your neighbor. There are no more men to be loved or to be hated. In being, there are realities and not just names, like God and man. These are names. Mrs. Eddy says they are names for the Supreme Being. They are names. Just as I'm called Max. You know, if you call me Max, what have you? You don't know anything about me. Just Max. It's not me. It's a name. And Mrs. Eddy is going along steadily in that textbook and trying first to give a better sense of God and then a better sense of man, and then little by little substituting God with principle, and then little by little substituting man with idea, and then finally at the end of the textbook, for the first time and only time, she says, all right, now if you give up that and just give, if the corporeal concept of God and man gives way to the incorporeal sense of principle and idea, then we have touched reality. And then if we touch that, we have one mind, and in that one mind, humanly, loving one another is fulfilled. Because in the one mind, I don't have to love the other mind with all my heart, with all my soul, with all my sweat and agony until I can do it and overcome it and so on, and overcome my hatred and my antagonism against it. If we rise to the synonymous terms, that's the issue of today, in my view, to rise out of attributes, to rise out of ideas into the synonymous terms. Then if we have one mind, then all those laws of loving one another is fulfilled. If we can get the greater, the lesser is fulfilled. So here she brings that out and shows that if you realize that there is only one mind, then the law of loving your neighbor is unfolded and fulfilled. When we fully understand our relation to the divine, she says, then we can have no other mind but his. We can have no other mind but his. Sometimes I feel, don't laugh now, sometimes I feel that you must think I'm getting a bit senile. Because I repeat for the 100th or 200th time the same thing, that there is only one mind. One would think it is quite enough if one says it once or twice. It makes such an impression on me to realize what it means to get away from the belief of minds many and really and truly in one's understanding, in one's heart, in one's feeling, to realize that being is one mind and the only mind, and to realize that if there is only one mind, then only this one mind manifests itself in life practice. Whereas all the chapters before were telling us that the human mind manifests itself as disease, as disharmony, and so on, and that the human mind, the mortal mind, is really that which is the thing which has to be handled. And here she gives it on a plate, served on a plate, and say, there is only one mind. If you have one mind, you have the biggest life practice you can have. Because then you not only have one mind, you have the one mind in operation. And if you have only one mind in operation, it says here, in truth, you cannot have a consciousness of error. Can you see the difference? In metaphysics, we are very busy in metaphysics. We have a whole list of patients, and each one has to be treated differently. This patient has to be treated against this errand, the other against this errand, the other against that errand, the other errand. It's a busy thing. The moment we touch the one mind, we know that the one mind infinitely is the life practice for every individual situation which enters into our consciousness. It's the healer to every case that enters in our consciousness. Because there is only one mind. And that one mind is not the one mind on a shelf, resting there and getting a bit dusty, but is operating, operating, operating as omnipotence, omniscience, knowing every case, knowing every truth about everything, as omnipresent, being present at every stage, present there where I am not, is omniactive, is active there when I have a good snooze at home. Still active. Then I begin to realize that perhaps I'm not quite senile yet, that there is just one mind. And that we cannot have another mind, but that one mind which is existing in reality. Or do we expect to have something which God has not? A mind of our own? An evil mind, a rotten mind, a sinful mind, an unhappy mind? Are we really expecting that we can have something which God has not, which being has not? Inconceivable. So, in minor truth here, she gives that sense that if we have that mind, which is the only mind, then we cannot have an other mind, then we cannot have an erroneous consciousness. We just can't. Whereas in metaphysics, I try to overcome every erroneous belief one by one, until I'm 80 or 90. Here, I begin to see, no, I take the whole. I see that I cannot have a wrong consciousness. We can have no other mind but his, and then she asks, no other love, no other truth, no other life. And no consciousness of the existence of matter or error. Really, what she does, she summarizes the whole chapter on the Christian Science Practice. Because the whole chapter on the Christian Science Practice was showing that there is only one love, one truth, one life operating as the consciousness which knows no error. And the whole structure of that chapter, as Chandoli has shown, is just this. So, we begin to realize, you see, that by understanding that we have only that mind which is God, we not only find that one mind, but see that that one mind knows nothing else but one love, one truth, one life. That that one mind is mindful of its own, if I may say so, is knowing its own, is knowing constantly its own, and knowing its own as the eternal unfoldment of life, the eternal self-realization of truth, the eternal self-fulfillment of love. And that's what mind is conscious of. Then the last tone here she gives, the omnipotent and infinite mind has made everything perfect. You have a sense of love, perfection. It includes all, a sense of love, blesses all, a sense of love, and does not admit that man can deviate from perfection. See, now it's no more trying to save ourselves. Now it's seeing that we cannot fall away from perfection. The moment we perceive that we are not working out things with our mind, but that there is only the mind of God, then we can see that man cannot fall away from perfection. Mathematics has no fear that the calculations could be wrong. No fear whatever. The principle of mathematics knows that all the calculations are right and doesn't fear that once a while it could go wrong. Why not with being? If you would see being in its perfection, then we would lose that sense that something could deviate from perfection. It's just a matter, you see, if we look up to God, then we doubt that everything is perfect. If we look out from the one mind, then all is love. If we look out from mind, then we know that nothing can deviate from the whole. Well, that's most mind. Now, it's always difficult to go through the subjects and recapitulate the text, but let's just sit back and see what this first subject tried to show to us in a nutshell. And this is what one has, so to say, to culture in one's consciousness, and to love in one's consciousness, and to admire and to worship in one's consciousness. It is first mind, the main tone, which shows, you see, by understanding God as mind, you have that mind. Man has that mind which is God. How, through those seven subtones, do I realize that state? First, as mind, she says, all right, you open your thought and you begin to study and perceive the nature of mind. Second, build a firmament and rely on what you have studied and what you know about mind. Third, see that that what you have studied and rely on is not in the body nor outside the body, but is bodiless, is inorganic, is free from place and time. It's center and circumference of your whole being. Therefore, that which you have studied as mind is the only I, the only ego in being. You have no mind of your own. That's the complete abdication of the little ego before the one ego. Then, when I begin to realize that therefore there is only that one mind which is God, then I see that mind includes all, and therefore there is nothing to be added. It's eternal, it's no need for new creation, procreation, and so on. And that one mind, therefore, as truth, has no consciousness of error. It has not to overcome error. It has not to get rid of error. It just does not know any error. And so I begin to feel and understand, but mostly to feel, that this mind is operating in perfection and just can't help operate as perfection. Can't do anything else. Even if mind would like to operate imperfectly, it couldn't. It can't. And in that way, I get that feeling that I have no more a mind of my own. There is one mind. And that mind, knowing itself as life, as truth, and as love. It's there where I begin to see the relationship which we had between absolute Christian Science and Christian Science, where I begin to see that life, truth, and love is my mind. That the infinite operation of the newness of life, the truthfulness of truth, and the perfection of love is my mind. That I have no other mind but this life, truth, and love. What can there happen? Only the maximum of good. Only the adventure of love. All right, we stop here.